mystery and magic of Channel U Network. Do you know that things aren't as they seem? Are you conscious of their attempted mind control scheme? Are you seeking others to create a team? Are you thirsty to think from a really clear stream? That's why you are here at Channel U. From the mysteries of outer space to spiritual healing, from the depths of the ocean to the heavenly ceiling, to the dreams that reveal your innermost feeling, close your eyes, breathe deep. We are connected to Channel U.
From the deserts of the great Southwest, you're listening to Jerry Wills, Horizon to Horizon on Channel U, Internet Radio.
Hello everyone, this is Jerry Wills and welcome to another episode of Channel U. Yes, that was a car door you heard slamming. We're in Tallahassee, Florida this evening. Beautiful Tallahassee. You know, it's my first time here and spending any time, and it really is a neat place. We were up in Nashville last week, and while we were there, going outside, it was really pretty darn cold outside. You know, that's how it is this time of year, I suppose, in the northern states. Even colder if you're further north. But down here, today it was about 75 degrees, sunny. This evening it's a little chilly, it's probably mid-40s. But not biting cold, it's just kind of nice. And we've had a chance to drive around a little bit. Now the reason why we're here is because this weekend, just like November 11th, in Nashville, this weekend, on Saturday, Kathy and I are hosting an event called the Gateway Experience. And the Gateway Experience basically is about a, 7-8 hour journey through the things that Kathy and I have been doing for the past 10 years. Things such as going into Peru, looking for lost cities, Kathy looking for different botanicals that the shaman use, and me too, of course. And we have slides of things that most people have only heard of, and a few things no one's ever heard of. Things or discoveries that we've made and so forth. So that takes up the first portion of the Gateway Experience. Incidentally, we call it the Gateway Experience because it's a gateway to human evolution, which I kind of mentioned that on one of the other shows about gateways that we found that are sound-activated that you can travel through. And we talk about this during the Gateway Experience. We tell people where they are and give them a brief idea on how they're operated. We can go into that more another time. I can tell you more about that on another show. Past the point of the trips to Peru, the other half of the Gateway Experience has to do with human evolution and the achieving of a greater state of awareness, expanding your consciousness. I tell everyone what I know about getting there, which doesn't mean I know it all, but I know some things that are helpful. And then during the last portion, I give a brief class on healing techniques that I use in my practice as an energy healer. And after that, we have about 2 hours where folks who are in the audience who have something wrong can come forward. I'll work on them, explain what I'm doing, to the best of my ability anyway, and see if we can help people get rid of pain and chronic problems. You might not have known this, but during the Gateway Experience in Nashville, there was a young man who came up well, I call him a young man. He was actually in his 40s. He was just a middle-aged guy, I guess. From the age of 13, he had been in pain. He had been in an accident, and medicine and doctors couldn't help him. They couldn't get rid of the pain that he endured day after day for all those years, really. And we're talking, what, 32 years or so? And after about 20 minutes of me working on him, he had no pain. Not a bit. He could bend his knees, he could bend his back. He was astonished. And this is pretty typical of the work that I do. When I find that there's someone in pain, I do what I can to get rid of the cause of the pain. Unlike medicines, medicines will mask it. Aspirin causes the pain to become masked. Painkillers, they do the same thing. They numb out the nerves. So you just can't tell that it's there. It doesn't mean it goes away. It just means that it's masked. What I do is I go to the cause of the pain, and I focus in, I find what it is, and then I do my best to eliminate it. It's an art. It's an art form. It's an application of physics, quantum mechanics, actually. Not the conventional Newtonian physics at all. They just don't seem to apply. So in 2 days, here in Tallahassee, I'll be presenting this with my lovely wife, Kathy, who will be assisting me. And as usual, it'll probably be a standing room only audience. So if you're interested in having a gateway experience in your hometown, go to the website, jerrywills.com. That's JerryWills.com. Send Kathy an email. Let her know you're interested, and she'll put the wheels in motion that will bring us to your location. All right. We've got a pretty interesting guest this evening. Like last week, another very good friend of mine. This fellow's name is Bill Foss. He's an artist, musician, composer. He has, in the past couple of years, started doing some of his extraordinary paintings. And I'm telling you, folks, the quality and the depth of his art is just stunning. It's just stunning. We're going to be talking with Bill in just a few minutes about his art and his new technique, painting on copper, and how he charges the copper. Bill also is a very gifted person in music. He has 3 albums. He makes very good rock and roll, but they always have an incredible message with the music. So I'm sure you're going to be enjoying hearing about that. Bill also goes into the Akashic Records. He's been studying a long time on how to access ancient records through Akashic reading, and I'm sure he'll have some interesting tidbits for us in that realm as well. One of the things I wanted to read to you this evening is by a fellow named Galileo. You may have heard of him. Galileo said, "The universe cannot be read until we have learnt the language and become familiar with the characters in which it is written. It is written in mathematical language, and the letters are triangles, circles, and other geometrical figures, without which means it is humanly impossible to comprehend a single word. This is the kind of magic that you'll find in the paintings of Mr. Bill Foss, an internationally recognized artist." Bill's on the phone. Hello, Bill. How are you?
Hey, Jerry. Good evening. How are you?
Doing fine. Staying warm?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Down here in Tallahassee, it's beautiful out. As you were saying earlier, it was up in the 70s today. Really nice out. And made it down to the beach. And
wow.
South of here, did some energy work, some meditation work, and just really soaked up the vibes of beautiful Florida.
You know, I forgot to tell everybody that you're part of the Gateway Experience. I don't know what I was thinking, or I wasn't thinking. Well, you know, that's pretty typical for me, isn't it? Bill would know, about as well as Kathy would know. Bill is part of the Gateway Experience, and, you know, when we have these events, Bill shows up with his paintings. He puts them on display, and they are for sale. But Bill also plays this incredible music. Even as I'm working on folks, he creates this beautiful backdrop of different melodies. So about your paintings, Bill, when did you first start becoming a painter? How did that begin for you? I'm just curious.
Well, I guess it began, you know, when I was a small kid. As far as I can remember, I've just always been really natural at drawing. I started as a pencil artist and pen and ink, you know, as a kid, and worked my way through school just creating in that fashion. And later in life, you know, I started doing music around high school, around that area of my life, and I found a quicker, more in-the-moment way of expressing creativity. So that's when I shifted over and went into creating music for several years, touring and you know, performing live, until I got to a point after that phase, settled into the southwestern United States, New Mexico and Arizona, and slowed down a little bit, got my rock and rolls out in my 20s, and about the time I was turning 30, I'd slowed down to the point to where I went into painting, and I'd painted over, you know, I just always knew I could do it, and it was just sort of second nature, so I never really explored it that much. But when I did sit down and start painting in full color, I found it to be very fulfilling, very expressive, working with all the colors, all the hues, you know, the tones, the depth, the three-dimensionality of a two-dimensional art form. Really got into that. Found it, that's, you know, just continuing the journey of creativity, basically.
So, in the beginnings, when you were doing the paintings, were they along the same lines, the same themes as what you're doing now? I know you've got this amazing collection of paintings of rock and roll artists, and I gotta tell you, folks, it's mind-blowing. It's just amazing to see this, the detail.
Yeah, well, thanks, Jerry.
Bill, let me just jump in here for a second. Folks,
okay.
You should go to Bill's website. It's billfossworld.com, billfossworld.com. You can take a look at what he's got going on there. It's just incredible. But go ahead, Bill. I'm sorry. What were you going to say?
Oh, no, that's fine. Thanks, Jerry. Thanks for mentioning the website. The rock and roll series, basically, I had jumped into commercial design school for an 18-month course in Albuquerque. And was working along that line, and I just sat down one day and did my first acrylic painting, which turned out to be the first acrylic painting of the series, and that was Stevie Ray Vaughan. It was a full-length feature acrylic painting, and after I did that, that was the very first painting of that series. I looked at it, and it was pretty much full size of Stevie Ray Vaughan, three-quarter view, and I just said to myself, I have to do more of these, and so I continued, and I did a Jimi Hendrix painting, and where I brought in, things started to come in from the other side. And it was interesting to me because I had chose to paint this series of classic performers, musicians, artists that had passed on. And what started coming through these paintings were elements and things that I couldn't quite explain. I just knew that they were coming from the other side, that there was spirit involved, and there were people present, whether it was them or, you know, spirit guides.
What kind of elements are you talking about, Bill?
For instance, the Jimi Hendrix painting, which shows him knelt with his guitar, there's a beach that's disappearing behind him, and the ocean is being lifted into the sky, which exposes a whole pattern of dolphins that are swimming through the air, and then up over the horizon line of the ocean, certain planets came into play, like the planet Earth is right over and behind his head, and then space and whatnot. It was fairly, you know, it looked fairly elementary to me at the time, but I started to tap into that there was something else going on, and I didn't know quite what it was. I just trusted and, you know, kept the brush wet and kept going, and over the course of the next couple of years, I started to really, you know, just study the performers as I was doing a painting, and would study their lives and the people that were in their lives and things that surrounded their career. And it came to a point where I did a painting of Jim Morrison, and there were so many elementals in the painting that there was a point where it was undeniable that I was getting messages from the other side.
And these were pretty much subconscious messages that were bringing themselves into the art as you were painting it. Is that right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, because I've looked at the Morrison painting. I've looked at all of them, actually. Every one of them are just astonishing to see them in person. But go ahead.
Oh, well, it got to the point where I immersed myself into the painting series, where I was, I created a large body of these paintings, which turned into be a collection, which I still don't own the originals, and I market, I market prints and whatnot, images of the paintings, out into the market, and I still do, I will still do one. I'm not necessarily just doing that now. I've shifted into some other art forms. But I will still bring one of those up. When something comes up, or, you know, a performer, a musician, me being a musician myself, it's easy for me to want to commemorate the people that are really out there, that I can feel a connection with. And I remember when I had started the series, how it was, I don't think about this so much, you know, I haven't for a while, but I, you know, you asking me, it takes me back. And I remember when I started the series, I just knew that I was creating a window for these guys to, you know, to communicate through or step through or something of that fashion. I wanted to do more than just a simple painting, you know, another painting of Elvis or another painting of Janis Joplin with a microphone in her hand. I wanted to put elements in there and colors and depth, so when somebody stepped in front of it, they would get something. You know, they would, if not a communication, they would see something about the painting that even I hadn't seen, you know, even which was really interesting. And many times when I was working on that series, I would have people come up and say, maybe it was a fellow artist or a close personal friend would say, hey, you know, you should put this into the painting, or I can see that. And they would come back the next day and it would be there. Because I always take things like that as messages.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I know the one of the most amazing paintings, they're all amazing, but one that really blows my mind is one of Page and Plant. What's the name of that painting?
Oh, the name of the painting is Heaven Knows.
And that there's a picture of all these paintings on your website. If anyone wants to go take a look, they can certainly go there now and take a look while you're listening. Just open another browser window. That one, if I remember correctly, was up for sale for like $96,000, wasn't it?
$62,500.
Okay. So these are not just casual paintings. These are masterpieces.
Yes, I guess you could call them that. I do know that they take quite a labor-intensive amount of creative energy to create, which, you know, I like to view as effortless, but nonetheless, it's time-consuming.
Yeah, well, the texturing on there and even the way you've got the hair, it just looks real. It doesn't look like just a painting. It actually has a very realistic quality to it. Now, let's switch gears a little bit.
You started
about 2 years ago painting on copper. And what's the idea behind this?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. and one of the next that was the next evolution of my creativity and art form and actually channeling spirit. I was living on a farm south of Sedona, Arizona, out in a beautiful part of the country. Great energy to use to create from out there. And I had the idea for several years that I was going to, or that I wanted to start painting on metal. And I had reached a point to where I continued to create, and I wanted to create some smaller pieces of art that I could sell more consistently than just the large paintings, which take are more time consuming as far as marketing and selling and placement in larger galleries and shipping them around the country and whatnot. So I pulled out a piece of copper and I set it on my easel and I looked at it and there was a reflection in the copper. And, you know, thinking back, I just remember I'm looking at the reflection and I'm seeing my reflection in it and I think about it. And so, as you know, one of the first images I did, and it was actually the first, was a painting of you.
Mm-hmm.
And I started the painting. I started very carefully laying the painting out. And I'd worked on it for two or three days, you know, trying to develop a way of actually melding the paints with the metals and to make it work with the translucence and the opaqueness of the paint. And I stepped outside to get a breath of fresh air, and I remember stepping back just a minute. One of the reasons, I mean, I just gotten to a point where, you know, like a lot of artists do over the years, okay, I'm going to paint, you know, okay, I'll just paint something that sells here. And I thought, when I first thought of the copper thing, it was because I was in Arizona, the copper state, and I thought, well, I'll do something that's marketable here. Well, I found out that really wasn't what was going on. As I stepped outside on that starry night, and I thought, it hit me, it fell out of the sky, popped into my head, that there was energy transferring back and forth between me and the copper. and all of a sudden it was, I felt my energy expand, a light clicked on. It was, even though I had nothing to go on, you know, I didn't have any leads for selling any of the paintings, or that it was, I was doing anything that was, you know, trendy as far as the art world concerning the southwestern United States. I knew that there was something large at play, and I became very excited. And I went back up, and I sat in front of the painting that I'd started and continued the work, and I felt the energy transferring back and forth between my energy field and the copper. And one of the interesting things about copper is that it's, as we know, it's a conductor of energy. It's used, you know, in a lot of electronics and wiring and whatnot. And so I could feel the energy transferring back and forth. So as I worked on the next several paintings, what I started doing, and I did... not from the get-go on that painting, but I started sitting and consciously focusing my chi, like as if I were practicing qigong or someone would practice reiki or some of the energy techniques that you talk about using when you do the gateway experience, focusing that energy in with my hands, with my breath, with prayers, affirmations, and I started to get pictures. I started to get imagery that started flowing through me of the person that I would be painting.
Wow, that sounds very interesting. So when you finished the painting, at that point you felt it was charged up and it was ready to go to its, you know, to its recipient.
Yes. It's always different. Every single time, it's, you know, every single painting is different. Sometimes, I've noticed, and I've started working with other metals besides copper, but what has started happening is that it's almost like on an elemental level, the elements of the metals, or, you know, elements of the planet, etheric energy, could be any other elements that I'm around, like if I'm around a large body of water. Many people will become more in tune or more balanced or in harmony when they're around large bodies of water. I started to tune in to where when I was around a copper piece, I could feel it vibrating with energy and almost subtle colors even before I knew what was going to be on it.
Wow. And then, of course, I can attest to the fact that when you delivered that painting to me, which was, you know, you had told me you were doing it, but I wasn't emotionally prepared for what it looked like. It was astonishing.
I remember standing right next to you when I first unveiled it, and I remember feeling your energy field expand with joy, and that was a very unique experience. I'll never forget that.
Yeah, that it was for me as well. You know, I remember you had one that you called the Blue Nun, and that one just knocked my socks off. This looked as if it was a real person frozen in time on a sheet of copper. Her eyes are closed, and she looks as though she's breathing, as if asleep. It was just incredible to see this, to just stand and stare at this for 10 minutes, 20 minutes, just absorbing into this. And like Bill was saying, the more energy you projected towards one of his paintings that were painted on metal, it started reflecting the energy back, and it created this holographic energy matrix that when you're experiencing it, You can't explain it. You can only say, I can feel something from this that I've never felt before. Even the pictures that are on your website, and they're fantastic images. But when you paint on metal, you can move from one side to the other. Or if you have a candle flickering, the way the metal has some abrasion to it, what is that called, Bill? Brazing?
Well, basically, I just what I'm doing is I'm just affecting the surface with different forms of sanding or brazing. In a couple cases, I've tried tempering it with heat, but mostly just affecting it with abrasives and whatnot in patterns.
Well, when you're standing there looking at it, you can move from one side to the other, sit down, stand up, and it just moves. It changes. And there's just no way to explain it. When you take a picture of it, you've only caught one tiny segment in time of the life that's in that painting. It doesn't even do it justice to have a picture of it.
The Blue Nun painting that you were talking about, if I can tell you a little story about that. I did that painting, and a friend of mine by the name of Ashley posed for that painting in a little town called Prescott, Arizona. And we used it for an art show last year for Easter. That was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we used it for an art show in Sedona for an Easter showing. And I took it home, and I ended up, it was one of my favorite paintings at the time, still an early picture in the series. I ended up taking it out to California, and I was out there painting in north of San Francisco in the Marin Bay area. Great energy out there. I came back. I carried the painting around with me for about a year, and I came back. And I had it, and I started working on the frame, and that was the first one that I started inlaying stones. Now I'm using specific crystals and healing stones, and I inlay those into a wooden frame that surrounds the painting and in certain patterns, and it's something that I just really have to focus in on, sit down, maybe I'll meditate, maybe it'll just jump right out, and I'll put in the patterns of the stones and just go right to work and on the finished piece. Well, one day Ashley came over, and we're sitting there and we're talking, and I was showing her the finished piece and the next evolution of this whole art series. And I had decided to do some Akashic work, and so I went into the records, I went into the Akashic records in a meditative state in my usual meditation chair, and I started seeing images of the Blue Nun, and it was amazing, just awesome. And I think we were talking about this over the phone at the time.
I remember that.
Yeah. And so I came back in, and I was sitting down in my living room when all of a sudden the whole living room was flooded with this presence. I mean, it was just the most amazing, softest, most beautiful energy that you could ever imagine, this loving, nurturing, and it was coming out from what seemed to be my heart, what seemed to be inside of me, but I could also feel it as a major, major presence in the room. And doing a lot of meditation and prayer work, yoga, qigong and whatnot in my dwelling at that time, there was already some pretty good energy flowing through the place, and it was fairly clear. So I was used to, I was used to having more of a heightened state of energy. But that presence it woke me up. On that occasion, I said, this has got to be the Blue Nun. And I went online and I was looking around and I found a picture of the Blue Nun, whose body, by the way, is under glass in, I can't remember, I want to say Spain. It's somewhere in southern Spain, that it has never decayed. And she was quite an amazing avatar that was sainted as a young girl. She was bilocating during the Spanish Inquisition. They were coming over and converting indigenous Indian tribes forcibly to Christianity, Catholicism, or killing them, wiping them out through what's now Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. And so this whole thing just sort of was in an intuitive wave of happenings that had happened within 2 or 3 days after having carried this image around for well over a year. I went in and I did this, doing the reading online and reading the whole story, and I knew that that's the presence that it just visited. It was just really, just one of those wow moments, you know?
Yeah, one of the astonishers.
It was a major astonisher.
Yeah, fantastic. So you're also doing mandalas on copper and other other designs, not just personalities, but other sacred images and so forth.
Yeah. I started doing mandalas, which in Sanskrit means circle, and they're sacred geometries. They're used throughout Tibetan. The Tibetan monks, the Tibetan teachings, Chinese culture, Asia, Southeast Asia. They're really all over the world. I mean, the Native Americans use medicine wheels, which were circular in nature. The Hindus were very well known for these, the siddhas and the sadhus of ancient part of that world had developed, and the Tibetans as well, had known, well, and if you wanted to go back even farther, you could, say that the Egyptians and the Atlanteans were using these same principles.
Well, we found up in the Andes, we found carved into stone, granite or basalt, very, very hard stone, these amazing spirals and shapes that they're like meditation points. We don't know if they have another significance or not. I would presume in some cases they do. But part of the research that we've been conducting the past 10 years suggests to us that people back quite a ways were traveling to other parts of the world and taking their cultures with them, and they were influencing less developed cultures, pretty much the same way as we're influencing less developed cultures now, except I don't think they did it with quite as much force.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. Do you notice that when you paint these mandalas on copper that there's a different effect than when you're painting a personality or just, a person's portrait?
There is. There most definitely is. The certain mandalas, I had done one which was called the Om Mani Padme Hum, which is a mantra that's been used, used throughout Hindu culture, Tibetan culture, was borrowed by the Catholics and the Gregorian monks. Om Mani Padme Hum means, which are Sanskrit syllables. The Sanskrit syllables vibrate when they're used with the human voice at certain tones or certain musical notes, or just spoken. The Sanskrit language has no negatives in it. So these are all they're all energetic what they call seed syllables.
Mm-hmm.
They vibrate through the chakra system and out through the meridians of the body. And so I would do. The first one I did, I painted the Om Mani Padme Hum on copper, and I sat down with my mala beads, or my what is like a rosary, but it's 108 prayer beads that are used by the yogis. And I would sit down, and I would start chanting Om Mani Padme Hum at charging this piece of copper, charging this mandala, which is on the start page of the website. If you click on it, there's a whole little thing about it, but I noticed that it was vibrating right back to me. I mean, it was like, it was like bouncing a ball against a wall. You know,
that's fantastic, Bill.
And then catching it. And my friend Rich, that you know, I did a small one for him, and he just got back from studying with the Dalai Lama. So he was fairly expanded anyway. He felt it when I gave him, because he's on a heightened energy level where he can psychically tune in and he can feel energy presences and whatnot. And he said when he came back from studying in India, he picked it up and he looked at it and he started using the mantras, and that the Sanskrit symbols started to light up and vibrate with almost like a spiritual fire. So I just thought that was interesting.
That is. It's quite fascinating. Folks, if you'd like to speak to Bill, like to ask him a question, toll free, 877-876-5227. Or if you're outside the United States, direct line in is 530-876-3222. We have a few minutes left for callers, about 15 minutes. Let's talk about your music real quick, Bill.
Sure.
But before we leave this thing about the paintings, though, I do want to mention the fact you've got your work all over the world. You've got huge pieces in Austria and other parts of the world. So that's really very impressive. With the music, does this tie in?
Yes, it does. What's coming up for me is this. I was thinking of this as you were talking about finding the ancient symbols earlier, and we'd started that part of the conversation. They were working with these symbols during the last phase of unity, where the energy was heightened on the planet before we went into separation, which we're coming right back up into the heightened, which we could, well, I mean, we could spend a whole other hour talking about that, but, you know, to sum it up, it's really about vibration. It's really about sound, light, color, energy, tone, and that's where my art's heading, and that's where my music has shifted. I was a rock and roll performer, singer songwriter, guitarist for years, and a couple years ago, I just decided to switch gears after taking a long hiatus away from the perils of rock and roll, so to speak.
Yeah, I've been there too.
Well, yeah. And, I mean, you know, there's nothing like it listening to a good classic song. It's like it can only take you so far, you know. And then
right.
It became like, where else can it, where can this go? Where can it go? What can I do with it? How can I be a tool? You know, what can flow through me? And I was feeling it, and so I just started bringing forth my poetry or songwriting in hopes that I can put positive messages out there in a powerful song arrangement, in a powerful performance that will, make a difference, affect people energetically, heal using tone energetically when people are experiencing a performance, and, you know, just for the sheer sake of entertainment and all coming together. And it's taken on quite a new light. You know, I love performing and writing songs and playing energetically. It's not just about me performing, though. The people that are listening to a performance are the other half of the equation. You can't perform without having people experience it. And so that's really what it's about. And within doing that, I just feel like I'm becoming a tool. You know, more and more, I feel like my ego is moving out of the way and spirit's just flowing out. And so if I can just continue to work in that fashion and, you know, bring forth what's good and what will be beneficial and spiritually uplifting and what's the right word I'm looking for?
Groovy.
Groovy. That's a good
groovy
one.
Groovy always works.
Groovy, dude.
Groovy, dude. So the you have three albums. What are the names of these three albums so folks can hear about
them? Okay. The first album was called Phoenix Rising, and that album is six-string and 12-string acoustic with lap steel and hand drums and percussion. That is
very good album, too, my man.
Oh, thanks. Recorded live in Phoenix, Arizona in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
The second album is called Save the Planet. That one is a full band, bass, drums, guitar, 12-string lap steel, classical guitar, even a more expanded range of positive messages with a powerful deliverance or performance aimed at really uplifting. But also I started to want to tune in and try to reach people in a popular form. It was sort of early on. Now, more performers are doing it more and more all the time, starting to use popular music and powerful song arrangements and even rock and roll to bring forth, you know, good vibe and music. You know?
Sure. And your third album?
The third album is called The Wingmakers. And that album was the next evolution of powerful song arrangement, powerful delivery. It has some more rock and roll stuff on it. So one of my hopes was that as a lot of the what we consider to be hard rock in its time is now more like easy listening compared to what the kids are experiencing. You know, it's you know, I don't know what some of the names would be of some of the heavier bands that are out there now. But there's a lot of good rock and roll, just a lot of good rock and roll guitar playing. But it's aimed at turning some heads of some of the younger people and in hopes that when, you know, somebody that really likes rock and roll hears a powerful recording where I was standing in the studio and planting my feet on the floor and turning my hands up and really projecting energy intently with a purpose while laying these tracks down to tape, the vocal tracks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know it's a very intense album. It musically is just fantastic. And then there's a new project that's underway that you and I are going to work on.
Yeah.
And that's going to be more of a laid-back repertoire instead of rock and roll, and it'll be something that's more headspace music, I suppose.
Right, yeah. Would be more in the new age or the meditative, easy-listening state, which is really, all forms of music are powerful. You know, I feel like it doesn't matter what kind, you know, whether it's Led Zeppelin or Lorena McKennitt or, you know, Inya or Yanni, or Kataro.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just creative.
Or Deuter.
Or ABBA. Or hey, what, don't forget Olivia Newton-John.
Oh. I won't forget that.
Yeah.
Have you never been mellow?
Well, maybe now and again, but.
Oh, geez. So you're going to be going over to Austria. Is it May?
Yeah, I'll be back in Vienna, Austria, in May for the 10th annual WESAC celebration. They started up in Mount Shasta, California, founded by Dr. Joshua David Stone, who is a very gifted spiritual writer. He's got probably 30-plus books out, which are around stores, around different places. And as many people may know, that he passed on year before last, and his assistant, Gloria Excelsius, has taken the WESAC Festival over to Austria, and we did it last May. I was very thankful to be able to take some paintings, a series that's on the website of avatars, ascended beings, over and display there, and we're going to do it again this coming May.
So you'll have your latest works over there, and you'll also be performing, is that right?
Yeah, I'll be one of probably 6 or 7 performers over the course of a 2-day event.
In Vienna, Austria, in May. Mark your calendars, folks. Time to buy your tickets now if you're going to attend. Now, we have about 5 minutes left for the top of the hour. You have been tapping into the Akashic Records. Can you briefly give us an idea on what this is all about?
Well, the Akashic Records is coming up for anyone out there that's studying seriously the paranormal or spiritual or expanded techniques. The Akashic Records referred to in the Bible as the Book of Life. It's basically been a path of mysticism. Many people throughout the course of history have been Akashic readers. Leonardo da Vinci. There are many people that are gifted in this day and age. Experience you, Jerry, accessing the records when you're working on someone, you know, and,
right,
and as you're getting all the imagery. A brief explanation would be that the Akashic Records are the basis for all psychic experience, all psychic dream experience, all gut feelings. It's like a world wide web. Every thought, word, and deed that has ever been enacted or ever will be enacted or is a possibility on the event horizon is in the Akashic Records, which is like I was saying earlier, almost like a computer program. And it's an energy field that runs around the planet up, let's say, a little higher than cloud level, so let's say 100 to 150 feet off the ground. And you can tap into this. You can consciously tap into the Akashic Records. Most psychics do it. Let's say all psychics do it. But to actually tap into the Akasha, which is Tibetan for sky library.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's just a pure, it's trying to get past any of the filters in, let's say, someone that's doing psychic readings or psychic awareness. That sometimes we know if we went to a psychic and everyone is doing the best they can, and that's all we can ever hope for. But I know people that have gotten readings said, "Hey, well, no, that just didn't feel right, or that didn't seem right, or that had this or that." And I think for the people that maybe they're more than, or maybe they're farther and fewer between, but the people that really want to go into an actual major super etheric library of all this information, it's all there, and all you have to do is get really close, really focused, and relax the body, and go into a meditative state, and journey up in, and you can place your intention. You know, just put forth some gratitude, and just state your intent. I want to visit the Akashic Records. A good way to do that is during a dream. You know, before you go to sleep at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're just about at the top of the hour here, Bill. I sense that you do this when you're doing your music and your painting. And, folks, if you have a chance, check out Bill's website, BillFossWorld.com. It's truly, truly an amazing website. He's got a lot of his masterpieces up there. If you have a chance to ever see these in person, take the opportunity to do it. And, of course, if you're in Tallahassee this weekend, Saturday, you'll be able to see some of it firsthand. Bill, I want to thank you for being with us this evening.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry.
It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Let me say this before.
Yeah.
Let me take about 30 seconds and say to everyone out there, I've known Jerry for several years, and I have not seen anyone accomplish some of the amazing energetic healing things that are beyond comprehension and beyond, literally beyond time and space. It's not Reiki. It seems very miraculous when someone experiences the healing, and that's when God steps into the room and you can feel it. And I just want to say you're doing some amazing work.
Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate that. Well, folks, humbled as I am by that last comment, thank you, Bill. We're going to have another show next week, so who knows where in the world we're going to be. But you can count on us being here on BBS Radio, Channel 1. This is Jerry Wills on Channel U. Thanks for tuning in this evening. And we'll join you again in 1 week.
You're listening to Channel U.
Hi, everybody out there. This is Xenia Seberg. And who are you? Because I'm there no matter where you are. Because this is Dr. Fred Bell's show on BBS Radio.
Health, Science, and Energy show on BBSRadio.com.
We'll make you sound better than you sound right now.
Well, that's a good thing. For me, it's like midnight here. I'm going to bed, which doesn't matter to you guys. Aren't you ready? Stay tuned.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here. Hey, thanks for listening to Stories Untold on BBS. And you can visit my website at cdbaby.com/CD/PeggyLee with an A. You can purchase a copy there or write a review. And stay tuned for my next album project, That's Just Hollywood, coming out in June. I'll be sure Doug has a copy for BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet.
This land is your land.
Join us every Tuesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern.
On The People Speak with host Basma Farhat.
As she interviews guests from the realms of politics,
activism,
spirituality,
literature,
science,
and other social issues.
The People Speak provides a forum
for live audience interaction,
allowing you to speak with guests
and for them to hear and answer you.
This land was made for you.